Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour conference call hosted by Chris Perkins. My name is Sue, and I am your event manager. During the presentation, your line will remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please key star then zero on your telephone, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties this conference is being recorded for replay purposes, and now I'd like to hand over to Chris. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Sue. Good afternoon, Wessex Route, and welcome to this week's Safety Hour. After a brief introduction, what I intend to do is just to run through a bit of our safety performance for the week. Then I was going to talk about some of the incidents that we've had during the course of the previous week, some ongoing activities, then a quick reminiscence about my personal experience of raising close calls, then a quick look forward, and then open the lines for some questions and some answers. So it's a few months since I last did the Safety Hour, so in case people on the call today didn't hear me previously, essentially my role within Wessex Route is Head of Business Change. So my team is responsible essentially for the delivery of projects and programmes within the Wessex Route, which look after improvements in performance, making efficiencies and improving safety. So those of you who have been around for a while will remember the Delta programme, which essentially had exactly that aim. The remit recently has changed slightly in so much as we still look after that portfolio, but we also look after the national programmes, which we need to conform to. I'm really proud of the contribution that the team makes to safety within Wessex. It's pretty ran through last week. There's obvious things that we do, such as the supports that we give to the Workforce Safety Improvement Programme. I know Pretty gave a sort of a fairly comprehensive summary of what we're doing within that. There's also things like the introduction of the updated 019 standard, so the work that Camilla Curtis is doing in terms of bringing that into the route. And there's a whole bunch of stuff we've done in the past which improves safety, like the mobile maintenance train. Some stuff which is ongoing, so not many of you may know about it, but we help to run the trespass reduction team, so looking after the safety of not just our own staff and those of the SWT, but also of the public. We're also running a trial in the semi-automatic train warning system, SatWAS, so that's ongoing at Worcester Park. The Vortec rear guard programme being rolled out into Worcester has been made since that's been run by my team. And there's soon to be the arrival of Craig Rowland into the team to look at things like electrical safety delivery. So all in all, as well as trying to improve our performance, the programme looks very much into improving our safety. Talking of safety performance, this week we've had, in terms of safety hour attendance, we've pretty much bang on the target we set ourselves, and that's 66% of the routes having a safety hour of some form, which is fantastic news. We've seen a really positive and encouraging uplift in the number of close calls raised. So this week alone, we've raised 156, which is significantly more than we have in recent weeks, which is a really positive and a notable success story. And we're also making continued and sustained work to close out close calls, because we recognise, as a sort of route leadership team, how frustrating it is to raise a call, but then not to get feedback on it. So the number of close calls that close in less than 90 days essentially is, again, just below our target. It's currently sitting at 78%, and our aim is to get it well above our target of 80. On that subject, we're looking to reinforce the team we've got looking at closing close calls, so bringing in more support and providing better sort of time to do that. We think that the recent initiative that Pretty has initiated is for the executive lead to take personal responsibility for closing out those close calls which are lengthy in its duration, so typically sort of above 60 days. And so at the moment we've got 18 close calls which are being personally managed by members of the leadership team, so bringing some focus to it really trying to give reassurance to the route that we take the closure of close calls very seriously, and we're doing something personally about it. What we seek to do is to cascade that down through our teams, so many hands making light work. and making sure we can improve the percentage of closed calls we close out within the 90-day deadline. Recent activities, which I just want to make you aware of. Many of you will have received an email from the STE organisation up in Milton Keynes, which is looking very much at the HAV issue, so with the hand arm vibration syndrome. So as virtually everyone will know, this is really the syndrome which is likely to befall people who have regular and sustained use of vibrating hand tools. As we all know, it is preventable so long as it's caught in sufficient time. So once the damage is done, it then becomes a permanent condition. So the real emphasis here is on prevention and early identification. As you all know, we've recently moved away from SWT to a new occupational health provider called OH Assist. And they're behind the pushing out of the circular, which has gone to all line managers. And essentially what they're asking us to do is to do two things. First of all, for colleagues that you have in your teams who use vibrating tools, to make sure they have their annual mandatory health surveillance check and they fill in the questionnaire that runs with that. And then secondly, when individuals require a face-to-face and they get notification of that, a face-to-face assessment that is, then we make sure that we allow those individuals and encourage them to attend them. Also, you'll be pleased to know that coming to a screen very close to you in the near future is a safety video by our Route Managing Director, Becky Lumlock. Becky's passionate about safety, as we all are, and she's in the process of filming a personal message, which will be prominent around the locations that we occupy, to really push forward that endorsement. So those are the two activities that I'd like to mention. Which then brings me on to, if you like, the main event of today, and that is just to take you through what I call sort of a personal experience of the close call system. I think many of us will appreciate that the close call system was launched, in actual fact, in June 2011 by the RSSB, and the aim there was to make sure that we ensured that risks were mitigated essentially before they materialise. The aim of the overall close call system is to drive improvements in safety culture and as a consequence in safety performance. And I think that's an important thing that we need to stress. The reason that they did that is that there was a lot of evidence which suggested that for every major accident or fatality, there are very often hundreds of events which are much less serious in nature. And nonetheless, under different circumstances, those less serious incidents could easily have caused injury or accidents. So by way of an example, if we think about a hole in the path on a walk route, many of us may well walk down that route over sort of day after day, and indeed no one possibly has slipped or tripped whilst they've done it. But the whole idea about the close call was to heighten people's awareness, and to make sure that people reported the issues in a straightforward and efficient way. So the close call system then was set up in 2011 to proactively prevent injuries. Personally, I found that the way in which I've adapted to the rating of close calls has changed quite markedly over time. So I first started working in the rail industry in 2013. I was a contractor then. I was working for the central team as a program manager. And for my sort of first 18 months, I was working up in the newly completed quadrant at Milton Keynes. So I was made aware of the close call system because it was publicised in terms of its launch. But personally, I was working in a very safe environment. So it was office-based. I had a short bike ride to the railway station. I then caught the train and the tube to get me to Milton Keynes, which, although a risky activity, is essentially something which is someone else is responsible for. I then walked no more than about 300 metres to the office, where I spent the day working, doing nothing really more risky than walking up and downstairs or risking spilling a hot coffee. So I knew about the close call system, but to be honest, I didn't really have very much incentive to use it, and as a consequence, I didn't. In the beginning of 2014, it's quite ironic, I was part of the crisis management team that was looking at the response to the extreme weather that we had that winter. And so when I was part of that team for about the next 12 months when I ran the Weather Resilience Programme, I was essentially doing some pretty detailed management of risk, and it was trying to make sure that, because we'd never have enough money to become weather resilient in its entirety, we had to just do loads and loads of risk management. But whilst I was assessing sort of collective risks against Network Rail and the UK in general, I didn't really consider the personal risks that I face. And it wasn't really until I joined the route in April of 2015 that close call raising became something which was a higher profile thing for me. It's very true that in about September of 2015, when we reshaped the alliance and I moved into more of a route role, and I started to attend the VIS sessions, it's very true that what gets measured gets managed, and close calls are no exception to that. So I started to attend VIS from September, as I say. And although there are lots of metrics to show how many have been raised and how many have been closed out, I never really, again, felt challenged in my environment. I didn't feel it sort of sufficiently unsafe that I should actually raise close calls. More to the point, as I went about my daily life, whilst I saw quite frequently unsafe acts, I didn't feel as though I felt any need to intervene or to challenge people. So for a few months, I then carried on in my role within the route. And actually, a catalyst for me was in April of 2016, where, as many of you will remember, the then route managing director, John Halsall, instructed everybody to produce a personal safety action plan. And my natural instinct was to think, hang on, if that takes me and everybody else half an hour, that's going to be quite a sort of resource-intensive activity, particularly when they need to be reported on and updated. And so I made a mental note that I hope this activity is going to be worthwhile in terms of the significant investment that we're making. And I must say, from a personal perspective, it absolutely did. What it forced me to do was to critically assess, in a quite a simple way, the routine that I personally had. And so by way of example, my routine hadn't, I think, changed massively since I first started working for Network Rail, in so much as I cycled to the station, I got to the train to the office, and then I walked to the office. But the establishment of my personal safety action plan actually forced me to make simple and, in many cases, either free or cheap solutions to manage risk. So, for instance, one thing I did was I had an old high-vis vest I used to wear for running. So when I cycle to the station now, I wear the high-vis vest, and I certainly appreciated that most recently, last week actually, where a sort of driver pulled out and clearly hadn't seen my lights or my vest until the very last moment. I think had I not been wearing it, I might have been injured more seriously. Equally, I've changed the route that I take when I cycle back from the station along quieter roads, which are well lit, so to make sure that the chances of coming across idiots like I've just mentioned are reduced. So five simple things within my action plan that I've introduced in a very simple way. But the thing that I think was really important about that initiative was the fact I took a pace backward and looked objectively about what I was doing for one of the first times in my working life. Okay, so that's more observant. However, by April of last year, I still hadn't felt the need to raise a close call. Eventually, I got slightly embarrassed that I was encouraging my team to raise close calls, but I hadn't actually done one myself. So I found a fairly low-risk activity. It was a tripping hazard on a set of stairs, which I took a photo of and very bravely committed it through the app. And whilst that was satisfying, it didn't exactly change too many people's worlds. So the thing that really changed was the fact that having done it once, I realised how simple it was. And actually, very gradually, it's heightened my awareness to risks of potential hazards. And I've got to say, I've personally felt a very virtuous circle, so much as the more you look for risks, the more you tend to see. So I've gone through a bit of a cultural change myself. And so by way of example, in the last 2 weeks, I've raised 9 close calls. 8 of those were behavioural, so by speaking to the individuals involved, I closed them out at the source, and the other one is in the system and is being attended to. Well, what I found was prior to starting to raise close calls, I found that I had every good intent, but I never quite got round to it because I was typically out and about or busy, and then by the time I had time to log it, I'd moved on. So what I tend to do now is be very trigger happy with my phone, and I take a photograph so that even after the event, after you've intervened and spoken to people, you can then log it on the system and make it count in that way. So I'm pleased to say that I'm now much more aware of risks. I proactively look for them, and those 9 close calls I've raised recently are not sort of things that don't matter. They are things which I believe will make a tangible improvement to safety. That stepping back and taking an objective look was really brought home to me. We had a visit by the Safety, Health and Environment Committee, which sounds fairly low-key, but actually it's made up of people like Mark Kahn and Peter Hendy and about 15 of the non-executive directors who essentially run Network Rail. They recognised the fact that the more they got out and about, the more they'd understand about the locations. They came down here to Basingstoke in April of last year, and they had briefings and tours of the facilities, and then we sent them out to look at things like the level crossings, and we deliberately picked one of our really top sections to go and have a look at the work they're doing on the track. And then they reconvened at Basingstoke Station and compared notes in terms of what they'd seen and what they'd come across. And I was, at the time, rather mortified by the fact that each individual who had been on the tour suddenly came up with about 3 or 4 close calls, and I thought, crikey. I know for a fact that we've introduced them to the best people in the route. I know for a fact that we've consciously thought about safety before they arrived. How on earth are they suddenly coming up with these close calls? And I thought we're conveying a poor view of our professionalism. And in practice, I think the way that they were able to do that is, firstly, they were very enthusiastic about coming and seeing the front line. It was something very new for them. They were obviously confident characters, and they just took that objective view as to how we were performing. So actually, we shouldn't have been in any way concerned about the close calls they were raising. In actual fact, we should be thanking them very, very much for allowing us to make our environment safer. So, what do I take away from my personal experience of close calls? After many months, indeed years, of not really feeling as though close calls applied to me, I found that by starting to make them, the number and the value that I've made recently has improved, and it's allowed me to take that more objective view as to where the risks are and how we can mitigate against them. So that's what I was really hoping to put across. The only things that I haven't done yet is to provide you with a bit of a look forward, and I know pretty touched in week's safety call, but I'd just like to make you aware, alongside the publicity material that's already gone out, of the 4 R safety workshops which are planned to take place over the course of next month and into April. So as you will have seen from the material, the first one's held in Guildford, one of our traditional locations. That's on Wednesday the 15th of March. We're going to a new environment in Bournemouth, spreading the opportunity to attend to those who operate more towards the south and the west of the route, and that's on Tuesday the 21st of March. Southampton on Tuesday the 28th, so a week later, and then our 4th and final one is in Woking on Thursday the 6th. And as is always the case, we'll have the daytime session, and then we'll follow that in order to facilitate the night shift workers. So that's my look ahead, and I think, Sue, what we'll do is open the line to anybody who's got any questions. Feel free to either ask me any questions on anything I've covered, or indeed to convey any personal experiences you've got of similar activities.
Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, your question and answer session will now begin. If you wish to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone, record your name and then press the hash key. If you then decide to withdraw your question, simply key star 2. All questions will be answered in the order received and you will be advised when to ask your question. All the lines will remain on listen only. Just to remind you, if you wish to ask a question, please key star, then 1 on your telephone, record your name and press the hash key. Your first question comes from the line of...
Chris Goodwin.
Go ahead, please.
Well, there's three things. The first thing is conductor rail protection boards. Now, I went round and I found the only way of getting these put in place, there is a standard which specifies where they must be, which was sadly nowhere near meeting. And I found that I had to close call with all sorts of details every individual place where they were missing. And sure enough, eventually, they do get put in. But it is very, very time-consuming working out mileages and so on and so forth. Something which I would have thought should have been put in automatically since there is a standard which specifies where they should be.
Yes. So I think, without a doubt, if the infrastructure was exactly as the standard suggests, then we would be clearly much safer, Chris. But regrettably, it is not as it should be in all regards. So you're right. The raising of close calls can, in some case, be quite time-consuming, particularly when it sounds as though you're dealing in quite a lot of instances. But is there anything else we can do in order to make it more straightforward and easier for you to do?
No, I mean, this has come up before, the way we all have different ways of describing where we are. The S&T use one method, the PY use another, the signalman use yet another. No, probably not, no. I mean, the wish is really that this stuff would just be there. As you say, it is a hope that the infrastructure would be in a better state than it is. But that's just one thing. I've got one in at the moment where I put a close call in about a year ago for completely bad in Guildford Station under the platform edge. So this is for the protection of the public. Yeah. And they renewed the whole of platform 6 with the plastic yellow boarding, which is now all starting to fall off, which I've close called again. But that's probably just waiting for some sort of possession to put it back.
It does seem. Feedback on that, Chris.
Yeah, it does seem. I've had no feedback. No. Yeah. That's one thing. Conductor rail. Second thing is working at height. I mean, with all the talent in Network Rail, surely somebody can come up with off indicators on stations that don't require the use of portable ladders, etc., etc. There must be some way of eliminating is having to work at height using temporary ladders. But they still get put in, still suspended from the canopies. You know, it's beyond me why we're still doing this sort of thing, why we're still installing this. The answer comes up at the time, oh, well, this is projects have done this. You know, someone else has designed it.
Yes, yeah, but I think I agree with you that that's a bit of a cop out, in so much as when it's designed in the first place, its ongoing maintainability should be a really high priority.
Exactly, exactly, and I wish people would consider this when they are designing things.
So I think the case here is making sure. I mean, the points that you raised about conductor rail, simple things like working at height. the key thing is making sure we correct the shortfall in existing infrastructure, and the way in which we're going to do that most effectively is prioritising those in which we identify. So it sounds to me as though your conductor rail work, it's you're clearly picking up these as you go around, but the key issue for you is the location.
In the, so much as it's time-consuming reporting it, I did try and report a whole blanket area where it was missing, but to my knowledge, that's not been done, and that is Guildford South. You see, we have types of track circuits which, if the conductor rail is next to the non-traction return running rail, and you get a short circuit, then some of the equipment explodes, and it explodes quite spectacularly. And should somebody be unfortunate enough to be near this piece of equipment, which is in the cess, and explodes, it could be could result in some quite serious injuries.
Yes.
So we're concerned that what we've had before, we've had even silver foil drift being blown across, causing these short circuits, and if there were protection boarding, that probably wouldn't be able to happen because you've got some barrier between the conductor rail and the non-traction return running rail.
Yes.
These are called HCI tracks. This is a well-known problem with them, that you get these explosions, and I don't know whether you've seen the effect of how it blows a hole in a steel case of something which is about waist high in the cess.
Yeah. Because I should have asked you at the outset, what part of the team are you in?
S&T I work for.
Excellent. Okay. And are you aware of any programs of work to improve the situation in terms of conductor rail protection boards?
I'm not, no. No.
Because what I was going to say is, I mean, clearly the first issue you raised is an important one. And what I was going to say, I think there's two sides to it. What's rather than having many, many close calls, which are trying to generate a change in the infrastructure, actually a campaign would be more productive. And the second point you raised is really good news that you do raise close calls, but the difficulty you have in terms of mileage is a key point. I know part of my team's work is working with Orbis and trying to improve the way in which we collect data. And one of the frustrations we have is the fact that we've asked repeatedly in the EMP world for a location button, which will make that process much simpler. And we've finally got traction in terms of them incorporating that into the solution.
That's good then, yes. Yeah. And the third thing is staff working, particularly S&T, on high voltages without the benefit of training on the electricity at work regulations or the provision of things like lockout devices.
Right. Okay.
And I, many years ago under BR, I went on an electricity at work regulations course. Most people in the S&T that I know have not, but they are expected, maybe tacitly, to work on voltages over 175 volts. And I have raised this a few months ago and not really had a satisfactory reply at all. But I feel that before S&T should be working on anything over 175, they should be aware of the electricity work regulations and have the provision of things like lockout devices and the knowledge of the procedures to use them. And we just seem to ignore this. You know, it's all very well having close calls for people not reverse parking or not wearing their goggles or whatever, but, you know, I feel these are far more important things that, because they're difficult to deal with, get pushed to one side. You know, tell me otherwise, please.
No, I think it'd be interesting, in fact, if we could have perhaps a longer discussion to understand what action you've taken to date so we can perhaps unblock this.
About the electricity work regulations?
Yes, yeah.
I wrote to the Wessex safety advisor, who was going to consult somebody else. That was the last I heard of it, and that was a few months ago.
Okay, excellent. Well let me lend my personal support to this, and let's get this unblocked, because the point that you raise is entirely valid.
Yes, and because people are doing it, and, well, let me just say there is tacit pressure for people to deal with these things. I could tell you some horror stories, but I won't over here.
Okay. Well, perhaps you could give me a call after this. I'll certainly enjoy having a conversation with you.
Right. If you tell me your number, I could give you a call.
Sure. I shall make it available to the whole of Wessex Street. It's 07887.
Yep.
540.
Yep.
117.
Okay. Thank you.
Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of. Please go ahead.
Ivan.
Please go ahead.
Ivan, hello.
Yeah, hello, it's Ivan. I think picking up from one point from Chris's is the fact of off indicators, the new off indicators that get installed are maintenance free. So the only time we should be to go up be going up a scaffold tower to get to those is to replace them. So that's all the new ones going in. Obviously, we've got to replace all the old ones, and that will happen over time. So that's the one point there. I think the electricity at work situation, when the SCT are working on the 650 power supply, there is an ability to lock out with a padlock. In fact, the signal general instructions tell you to do that, and maybe that's a briefing with a dedicated padlock or whatever. That may be a briefing exercise. That might be what Chris was going on. But I'm sure you all offline will have those discussions. What I wanted to raise.
Sorry,
I'm in a room with a number of other people. There was interest in what the SHE committee raised as close calls. They're sort of independent people coming and having a look at our railway and our assets and environment. Could you just outline, Chris, some of the things that they raised as close calls?
Yes, certainly. I mean, it's simple things that perhaps we just take as we kind of overlook them because they're part of our environment. So when they got dropped off in one of our vans, there was a sizable puddle in the middle of the parking area, which essentially was a tripping hazard. They believed under certain circumstances an individual would potentially wear goggles, whereas the individual didn't, so it was simple things that were highlighted because it was a third party, sort of fresh pair of eyes looking at the activity. There were no major glaring safety issues because they clearly would have been very detrimental to the route's reputation. But it was just that fresh pair of eyes looking at something that we do day in day out, and we perhaps take it for granted.
Okay, because it's always good, as you say, with fresh pair of eyes. Really, you all should have fresh pair of eyes at the beginning of the shift or whatever.
Thank you, particularly on the lockout device and the feedback on the off indicator. Any more questions?
We have no more questions at the moment.
I think, in case there are any more questions, I shall just, by way of summing up, just really go back to the safety performance figures for this week. I've talked very much about my personal experience of close calls and the need to raise good quality ones, particularly those which are behavioural. Indeed, as we move into a more safety conscious, sort of security conscious environment, we now have the ability to raise those calls for security matters. We'd be much more going forward. But really, just to say congratulations on the work this week today, so particularly safety hours right up there with 66%. A real spike in the number of close calls raised. And I hope you will see, as I tend to do with Chris, the greater determination to really close out close calls. So I think, unless there's any immediate questions, Sue?
No more questions. I'm sorry, Chris.
Brilliant. No, it's fine. I shall close the safety hour for this week, and thank you very much indeed for your time and attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining. Have a very good day.